With support from Owens Funeral Home at the corner of Elm and University in Champaign. Locally owned and operated and serving families since 1925. Owens Funeral Home invites you to join them in supporting public radio. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Christie Clinic, with offices in Champaign, Urbana, Rantoul, and Mahomet, providing quality health care to the residents of Central Illinois.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk show. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us today. This is a program that is the program we're going to do this morning, something we do periodically through the year and particularly at a time like this when we're asking people for money. It's a show that we do to introduce you to some possibilities for new books, things that are exciting that you might enjoy reading. And we have a couple of guests here who have brought books to share. And we will be doing that here this morning. Also, what we'll be doing during the course of the program is to ask you to send us money, because this is also one of those times that we try to remind you just how important listener support, financial listener support, is to the station. So we've been doing that all week. Now, the thing that we have going here this morning is, you know, we always look for incentives. We look for things that we can tell people or offer people to get them to go to the phones. We believe in books here on WILO, and we have lots of them, and, well, more than we can deal with ourselves. We like to find homes for them. So some years ago, my friend Jack Brighton.
Hi.
That's him.
That's me.
He and I sort of came up with this idea. Well, let's say to people, if you call in and make a pledge, we'll send you a book. And that's what we're going to do.
Absolutely right.
And we started calling it Crazy Dave and Jack's Big Book Giveaway. And over the years, the number of people that we've added onto the list has grown. So it's now sort of Dave and Jack and Harriet and Martha and Travis and anybody else who wants to be on the list.
We're all crazy.
We're all crazy. And we're giving away the book. So if you call in and make a pledge, we'll send you a book. Now, how exactly, Jack Brighton, does this work?
You call the pledge line, 217-244-9455. Make a pledge of $40 or more per year. That's, you know, just cents a day. We will send you either a fiction or a nonfiction book from the Focus 580 book collection. You specify, when you talk to the volunteer answering the telephone, fiction or nonfiction. Simple as that. And we have so many books that we really can't list them all. Sorry about that, but we guarantee these are all grade A, top quality, hardcover new books that the publishers just send us because they like us so much. And we like free stuff, and we think that you do too, probably. So, you know, books are a great thing to have, so we'd like to share them with you. Again, the pledge line, 217-244-9455. Anytime during the next 2 hours you call that pledge line and make a $40 pledge, we will send you a book. Simple as that.
All right. That's the deal. Here on the program this morning, we will be making some book recommendations. That is, our guests will be making some book recommendations. And by the way, we'll, just as soon as possible, we will have the titles, the authors, on our website. So if people are listening, you don't have to feverishly try to write down all the titles, unless, of course, you don't have internet access, in which case we could try to get the information to you. But we know that when we do these programs, people say, wait, what was that book? Who was that writer? Mm-hmm. So we want to try to make that information available to you. And also, if you have a book to recommend, you can call. We'd be very happy to hear from you. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. The regular numbers for the show. And the guests are Philip Graham.
Hello.
He's been with us before a number of times to do this. He is director of the Creative Writing Program at the U of I and is an author himself. And then when we do these shows, what we've done is, for a long, long time, basically had two guests, Philip and Tanya Leazakos from the Pages for All Ages bookstore. This time around, she couldn't be with us. And so we thought, well, okay, where do you go to find people who are excited about books? And we thought, the library. What a concept. So also joining us this morning is Chris Williams from the Urbana Free Library. And you work in adult services?
Yes, right? I do.
So what all do you do? What do your responsibilities include?
We answer reference up there. We build the book collection. That's the most fun part. I get to order the bestsellers. I get to order the books that I like. We just help people use the library, which is getting easier now that things are settling down a little bit more. It'll be even better next spring when we actually have the library completed, and I would encourage everyone to come in.
And maybe if people don't live in Champaign-Urbana, they wouldn't know that there has been a very ambitious kind of expansion project going on at the Urbana Library, a very large new section has been built, mm-hmm. added onto an older building, one that's been there for a long time.
Yeah.
And like a lot of libraries and a lot of places, you have had in recent years great expansion in demand for mm-hmm. library services. And so you built a whole new section on the library. So that did that more than double your floor space with the new addition?
I think so. And certain departments, I think the children's department actually tripled in size. Our department did not get quite as much, but it's going to be pretty. It's going to be lovely. The outside, if you'll drive by, is already beautiful. They have the same limestone. They got the limestone from the same quarry that the original building came from. So it all matches beautifully. It's a lovely building. Going to be nice.
Well, we're glad to have you here.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. Well, the way we do this is generally the guests sort of take turns and talk about a particular book. They have both brought some, and we'll do that. And also, as I said, if people who are listening want to call in, they can do that too. Well, Philip, since you're the veteran of this of this program, you want to start out?
No, I will. But before I do that, I'm going to suggest, David, that maybe during this 2 hours you might want to do a recommendation for Cloud Atlas, which you've read and was a Booker finalist, and I'm very interested in reading. So maybe not now if you're not comfortable about it, but before the 2 hours are up, would you feel good about telling us a little
bit
about
that? I could feel good about that. That was a book that I read just recently when I was on vacation, and I liked very much.
Yeah.
And yes, I could do that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. I'm going to start out with a novel by one of my favorite writers, a new novel by José Saramago, who won the Nobel Prize, I think, in 98 or 99. This novel is called The Double. And it's about a history teacher in a secondary school. His name is Tertuliano Maximo Afonso. And he discovers one evening when he's watching a video of a movie that a colleague has recommended to him that there's a minor character in there that looks exactly like him. And he plays it over and over. And because it's a minor character, he can't find the name of the actor in the back at the end of the film. So he starts renting films from the same film company. And he finds this actor in little roles here and there and here and there, and he becomes more and more upset at how much this person actually looks like him. And he follows this man around. They have a contact, and they both are stunned at their resemblance. But there's another part of this book that I love, and that is that Saramago has a wonderful sort of narrative voice. He spends a lot of time talking to the reader when there's some downtime narratively, such as if Tertuliano is driving from the workplace to his home. You know, what Saramago says is, well, you know, he's thinking about things that are not really part of the novel, and so I want to talk about this. And then he'll start talking about it and say, well, I got to stop because Tertuliano's now in the parking lot of his apartment complex and so forth. And they're always very sort of wise and wonderful. And in an odd sort of way, it seems to me that they're the kinds of things that Tertuliano needs to hear. And if he got to hear them instead of the reader, he might not get into the trouble he gets into in this novel. And this one is about something. I just love this. It's about sub-gestures. Saramago was talking about sub-gestures, and he's taking the time to doing it because somebody's giving a boring speech at a faculty meeting. And Tertuliano has just given a boring speech of his own. And this is how this starts. And again, the thing that's referred to here is Tertuliano when one of his colleagues have had a little kind of dispute in the hallway a couple hours before. The effect of Tertuliano's speech was, as always, to elicit a resigned sigh from the headmaster and an exchange of glances and murmurs from the rest of the staff. The mathematics teacher smiled too, but his smile was one of friendly complicity, as if he were saying, "You're quite right. None of this deserves to be taken seriously." The slight nod that Tertuliano sent back to him across the table meant that he was grateful for the message. But there was something else accompanying the gesture, something that, for lack of a better term, we will call a sub-gesture, telling him that the episode in the corridor had not yet been entirely forgotten. In other words, while the main gesture appeared to be openly conciliatory, saying, "What's done is done," the sub-gesture hung back, adding, "Yes, but not altogether." Meanwhile, it was the next teacher's turn to speak, and while he, unlike Tertuliano, discourses eloquently, pertinently, and proficiently, we will take the opportunity to discuss briefly, all too briefly given the complexity of the subject, the question of sub-gestures, which is, as far as we know, being raised here for the first time. People say, for example, that Tom, Dick, or Harry, in a particular situation, made this, that, or the other gesture. That's what we say, quite simply, as if the this, that, or the other, a gesture expressing doubt, solidarity, or warning, we're all of a piece. Doubt always prudent. Support always unconditional. Warning always disinterested. When the whole truth, if we're really interested, if we're not to content ourselves with only the banner headlines of communication, demands that we pay attention to the multiple scintillations of the sub-gestures that follow behind the gesture, like the cosmic dust in the trail of a comet. Because, to use a comparison that can be grasped by all ages and intelligences, these sub-gestures are like the small print in a contract, difficult to decipher, but nonetheless there.
And this, I know this is a favorite author of yours.
Yes.
In fact, one of those people that the last time we went around with the Nobel Prize for literature was one of those people who always seems to be perpetually on the short list of people that we think might possibly win the prize.
Oh, no, he won it.
Oh, yeah.
You're mixing that with Cotteret, who I still know. I'm still hoping will win.
This guy
got it. Yeah. And since then, he's published, I think, 3 or 4 books. The Nobel Prize didn't slow him down. Sometimes when people get a Nobel Prize, they say, made it. You know,
no,
royalties piling in. I think I'll go off to the Bahamas or whatever, but not Saramago, okay. You know. Maybe it's because he lives in the Canary Islands, which is beautiful to begin with. But he does, in fact, write a book about every 2 years, and this is a brilliant book. I mean, this guy is in his 80s now, I think.
So when was it that he won? Was it last year?
No, it was 99.
Oh, was that far
98
back?
Okay. Or 99, something like that, yeah.
All right.
And this is, I think, one of his very best books.
All right, very good. And he has a number, if you'd like that, there are a number of others that are available.
Yeah.
Want to read
too. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the problem here is that Tertulliano and the guy who looks exactly like him, you know, if they understood the sub-gestures, they would see that their outward resemblance has nothing to do with who they really are. But the outward resemblance is what gets them all riled up because they hate the idea of someone looking exactly like them. Mm-hmm. But as I think, you know, Saramago tries to say, you know, we are who we are inside, not who we are outside. Or we are more who we are inside than who we are outside. Yeah.
Very good. This morning on this hour of Focus 580, actually both hours of Focus 580, today devoted to discussion of new books, something that we like to do every once in a while on the program. And we have guests who come in and they bring books that they have read recently to recommend. And I've gotten a number of good suggestions that way from Philip and from Tanya. And perhaps you have as well. So if you're taking notes, great. If you have access to the internet, all of this will be on our website.
There'll be a test, actually.
And if you want to call in and recommend something yourself, you're certainly welcome to do that. Well, now we'll turn to Chris Williams. Now you see what the deal is. This is how we do it. Tell us about something that you brought.
Well, this one is called The Beekeeper's Apprentice by Laurie R. King. And if you're a longtime fan of Sherlock Holmes, you might think that he died at the hands of Dr. Moriarty at Reichenbach Falls, but you would be wrong because in this series, Laurie King takes it a little bit further in that he picks up a new apprentice. He retires to Sussex Downs and becomes a beekeeper. And while he's sitting there on the downs one day watching his bees, he's got them painted different colors and he's going to see which bee is going to which hive. I don't understand, but it's very Sherlock Holmes. So a young woman runs across him. Literally, she stumbles over him. Her name is Mary Russell. She's 15 years old. She's an American heiress and she's waiting for her inheritance to come in. She's living with a guardian aunt who is not very pleasant, and she likes to wander around. So she wanders and finds him, and they strike up a conversation. And Sherlock Holmes finds her to be as bright and intelligent a person as he's met in a long time. They both have complete disdain for other people's logic processes, and so he decides to take her on as an apprentice and initiate her into the mysteries of deduction. So the time goes on, and she goes to Oxford, and you get a very nice feel of what it's like in England during World War I. That's when this is set, about 1914, I think. And you get a good feel for student life at Oxford. And actually, she fills in a lot of the blanks that Conan Doyle left about Sherlock Holmes's home life, so to speak, with Mrs. Hudson. It's a lot of fun. It's very interesting to see what he does in his off time. Mm. And He's trying to retire, but he's not doing very well. So their first collaboration, after he decides that she's actually ready, involves the kidnapping of the daughter of an American senator. And after they look into this, they think there is the hand of a master criminal, in quotes, at work. And they eventually do rustle the they rescue the child, but then they find attempts are made on their lives as well as Mrs. Hudson and Dr. Watson. And so the evidence they're getting seems to indicate that somebody wants to get Holmes and everyone he holds dear, but why? So this is just a well-written book. I'd like to read just a little bit to give you a flavor because it does seem a lot like Conan Doyle, the writing style, actually. In this part, they're on their way to pretend they're gypsies, and they have purchased a caravan, and Holmes has decided he's going to look at the brakes or something to make sure it doesn't break down on them. And Russell says, "Holmes, there's something I must ask you, not just now, Russell. I need to know, is my presence an embarrassment? Don't be absurd." "I mean it, Holmes. Inspector Connor today all but accused you, me. Well, I just need to know if my presence is inconvenient." "My dear Russell, I hope you don't flatter yourself that because you talked me into bringing you on this delightful outing, that means I am incapable of refusing you. To my considerable..." Oh, blast. Give me a rag, would you? "Thank you. To my considerable surprise, Russell, you have proven a competent assistant and furthermore hold some promise for becoming an invaluable one. It is, I can even say, a new and occasionally remarkable experience to work with a person who inspires not by vacuum but by actual contribution." Hand me a large spanner. His next remarks are punctuated by grunts. "Connor is a fool. What he and his ilk choose to believe is no concern of mine, and thus far does not seem to harm you. You cannot help being a female, and I should be a fool as well were I to discount your talents merely because of their housing." "I see, I think. Besides," he added, his voice muffled now by the undercarriage, "a renowned bachelor such as myself, you probably would be more of an embarrassment were you a boy." There really was no possible response to that statement.
Very nice. I like to dig at Dr. Watson, too.
There. Yeah. It's a Although they're very fond of Watson. Yeah. Russell becomes very fond of him. Hmm. She calls him Uncle John. Hmm. The Conan Doyle's home is pompous, smug, and misogynistic. I think we can all agree that he really was. And this Conan Doyle is just pompous and smug. And
Retirement does wonders,
yes,
right, for
so
a fictional
Sherlock
character.
For our time. Well, that's it continues to amaze me just the life of this particular fictional character. I think he is probably one of the best known characters in all of fiction. And and one of the amazing things about it is that I think it's true. To this day, people write letters to 221B Baker Street looking for Sherlock Holmes to help them with something. People can't quite get it into their heads that there never was, there is not now, nor has there ever been such a person.
Boy.
Something about the character just seems to he won't die.
I think that's wonderful and deeply depressing, though, that someone doesn't know that and writes the letter, even though it's wonderful that a writer can pull that magic over a reader. A century later.
All right. So, is this part of a series? Or?
This is the first of a series, and the others in the series are a monstrous. A monstrous regiment of women, in which they investigate a murder among charity workers, and then a letter of Mary. They search for a papyrus supposedly written by Mary Magdalene. That one sounds interesting to me. I haven't gotten that far. The Moor. They investigate a mysterious murder of a tin miner. Old Jerusalem. They're forced to flee England, and Brother Mycroft sends them to Palestine. And the latest one in 2002 was Justice Hall, where they return from the trenches of World War I to find a lost heir. I would just recommend this series. Even my husband liked it. And by even, I mean... He said not to say that, but this is written from a woman's point of view, and yet it's a a fascinating study of both characters, mm-hmm. really.
Yeah. Okay. So if you like Sherlock Holmes, if you like mysteries, you might try it. And if you read The Beekeeper's Apprentice and decide you really like that, well, then there are a number of other books that you can read. And you probably, I'm sure people will toss them down like, I don't know like salted peanuts.
There's kind of another series.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Very good. Very good. I don't know, Philip, do you want to?
Sure, if we have time, I can do something. This is from a story collection by another one of my favorite writers, Lynn Sharon Schwartz, her latest, called Referred Pain and Other Stories. Maybe I should warn people that the title story is about trouble with a dentist, so if you're sensitive to those sorts of things, you might want to skip that story. Yeah. But this is a wonderful story collection that has a wide, wide stylistic range. She writes some stories that are fantastic, some stories that are philosophical, some that are very funny, some that are very grim, and she seems to do it all beautifully. Once you get into a new story, you, in a sense, forget the story that you've just read, which doesn't impose itself upon the next one. She just immediately establishes, okay, here's how I'm going to tell this one. And this is a beginning of a story called The Word that I thought a lot of people would be able to relate to, about forgetting a word. I've forgotten the word that was so crucial I promised myself I'd jot it down as soon as I got a chance. I was on the street at the time, walking from the bank where I'd made a deposit to the drugstore. Or maybe it was from the drugstore to the dry cleaners or the copy shop. Anyway, the word was a reminder of the idea for a story that came to me in the bank or drugstore, and I vowed to write it down as soon as I got to the library, after I'd picked up my necklace at the jeweler's. It did occur to me to stop right there on the street and get out a pencil and paper. Oh, I wish I had, but I was so sure I'd do it later. There appeared to be a scrap of paper in my pocket with a few words on it for another story I was planning, about a writer going blind who hires an assistant to help with his correspondence and then begins to suspect the assistant is lying about what's in his mail, making up fan letters to cheer him up, or possibly for some more sinister motive. The words for that story were, writer going blind. That would have been an appropriate scrap of paper for the new word, the two notations forming a little list of ideas for when I got to my desk after my errands. But no, I thought I couldn't possibly forget once I got to the library, since the word was so perfect, summing up or representing or by some idiosyncratic connection clear only to me, bearing the germ of that excellent, memorable, ha, idea for a story, maybe even a novel. I can't remember now how far I thought the idea would take me. A word that would suffice to make the idea flower in my mind, or rather reflower, since it had already flowered in the drugstore or wherever, generated by I can't remember what. Certain words can do that, can bear that weight. At least they've done so in the past if I write them down fast enough. But once in the library, I did forget, distracted by whatever insignificance took place at the dry cleaners or the jeweler's or by something I saw on the street or some new thought intervening on the way. I don't think it was any kind of self-sabotage, since I'm not usually so inclined, and besides, I wholeheartedly liked the idea as well as its word, and was eager to take it and run with it. But now that the word is gone, there's no use trying to recall it.
We're talking about new books this morning, something we do occasionally on the program. It's always a lot of fun. Philip Graham is here. He's a professor of English at U of I, is also a writer himself. And Chris Williams, who is works in the adult services section of the Urbana Department of the Urbana Free Library. So they have brought some books to recommend. People who are listening can do the same thing. We also want to remind you that maybe if you'd like to have a book yourself and you would like to support this station, we can make it possible for you to do both of those things. You can do that right now, as a matter of fact, if you give us a call at 244-9455, make a pledge at the $40 level, so which is our basic level, or more, if you can. That is up to you. We will send you, with our thanks, a new book, because we get so many of them. Some of them are featured on the show. But we can't do all of them. We do want to find homes for them, so we came up with this idea. Said, let's see if we can get people to pledge by promising that with our thanks we'll send a book. So you call in 244-9455 and tell us, would you like fiction or nonfiction? And we'll pick something, and we hope that you will like it, and we'll send it out to you. And Jack Brighton is here. He's our web guy. He is the producer emeritus, Focus 580. is occasional host for the show if I'm too lazy to come in here to do it. So he's a known voice, and he's here to help make the pitch.
Right. You know, and I just thought of something. This always sets out a feeding frenzy, if I can say that, which I apparently can't, people making pledges to get books because they want to support the show, and they know that we're going to do this every time. So they wait for this opportunity to call in and make that pledge and get a free book. Because after all, some of these books are, you know, they're like $20, $30 books. So it's a pretty good deal, let's face it. 244-9455 is a pledge line. 217 is the area code. 217-244-9455. If it's long distance, you can make it a collect call and we'll still send you a book. And I just thought of this. If somebody wants to pledge $80, how many books would they get?
Well, I'm in public broadcasting. And the reason I'm in public broadcasting
is
I was not very good at math.
Oh.
But I think in this particular case, we would have to send them two.
I think that's right. If somebody wanted to pledge $120, David, now quickly, what?
I'm sorry,
how many
that's
books?
Much too hard for me. Could be more than one.
That's right, more than one book. Three. We will send you more than one book if you will contribute more than $40. So make that pledge call right now, 217-244-9455. You can have as many books as you want.
It wouldn't be the same book three times.
No,
though, right?
No. These would be thank you. That's
excellent point. Three different books.
Yes. You should work in journalism. That's a good question.
He probably has an advanced degree.
He's a smart guy. I bet he could even do the math.
Yeah, I'm sure.
With some help.
That's right. 244-9455. Let's check in with David Teal, who's our program director on WILL-TV, who graciously volunteers to help us out during these times. And I see there's one phone active, and I hope that there's more coming. David, how are we doing?
Well, we have had three calls this morning during Focus so far, and we'd like to say thank you to Julie Clausen of Champaign and to Carl and Barbara Lewis of Saybrook, who have both called in this morning. There's another call coming in right now. They're asking for a nonfiction book. So, we'd like to hear from at least 20 this morning during the book show, and you're going to be doing this for 2 hours, I believe.
Yes.
So by 10 or 12 o'clock, by noon, we want to hear from at least 20 people who will take at least 20 books off our hands, because the one thing I have learned from spending some time up here is there's an awful lot of books.
Yes. Well, and we'd love it if we ran out of books, you know, but I just don't think that's going to happen. You can help us try, though, with your pledge call, 217-244-9455, and get a free book.
Yeah, that's great. It'd be lovely if we could hear from some people who had not contributed before. And we have been suggesting that if people were thinking about trying us out, you know, how about that basic level, which is $40? So with our thanks and a year subscription to Patterns with that $40, we'll also send you a book.
That's like a trip to the bookstore, only, you know, you get a free book and supporting the station for a year. So that's a good deal.
I hate to bring this up, but you should mention that if you don't run out of the books and you have ones left over, they do get sent to the book pound.
We don't like to talk about that.
Because some of them get put down, and you really don't want that to happen to a good book, you know?
No. There are some books that probably should be put down. I've read books that I thought, I'm going to put this book down because it's not worth going on. But not many.
Not many.
Not many. Okay. Actually, we do end up probably sending them to, a lot of books have gone to the U of I library. We've given some to our staff members here.
They don't go on eBay.
They don't go. We don't go on eBay. We don't throw them away. We would never do that. But we'd like to find good homes for them. So if you'd like to have a book, you'd like to support the station, give us a call.
217-244-9455.
All right. Let me introduce again our guests, Chris Williams from the Urbana Free Library and Philip Graham from the Department of Creative Writing here at the U of I. He's an English professor and also a writer himself. So we're here and we asked them to come and recommend some new books, and that's what we're doing. Also, people who are listening, if you'd like to recommend something to, maybe you've read something recently you thought was really good and you'd like to tell us about it and other people, you can do that. Same number that we always use here, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Now we'll go back here to Chris Williams. What do you got for us next?
Well, the next one, this would not be necessarily for the squeamish. It's Darkly Dreaming Dexter by Jeff Lindsay. This is an interesting book. I thought it was fun, but really it isn't probably for everyone. Dexter Morgan is the hero of this book, and he's not exactly the kind of guy you would want to bring home to mom. He's handsome. He's polite. He says all the right things, but he's a sociopathic serial killer.
Oh, not another one of those.
Yes.
Oh,
no. Yes. He's different, though. He does have one golden rule. He only kills bad people. His late foster father was a cop, and he realized Dexter's dark talents early on, and he channeled them into something that he hoped would at least benefit society. So Dexter, the serial killer, only goes after other serial killers. Mm-hmm. Now, surprisingly, despite his penchant for death and dismemberment, it's actually hard not to like him. He's funny. He has a very funny, ironic sense of humor as he writes this book. It's interesting to watch his mind. He's got a very cold, logical personality, and he struggles very much to emulate emotions he doesn't feel and to act completely normal and not different from anyone else. He's learned to act like the perfect gentleman. He is supportive of his sister, a Miami cop. And despite the fact that he can't stand the sight of blood, I don't get this part. If you're a serial killer, I would think that would be a plus. But he works as a blood splatter analyst for the Miami Police Department. So that job helps him keep tabs on the latest crimes, and it also gives him a heads up on who his next victim might be. His well-organized life is suddenly disrupted when a second, much more visible serial killer comes to Miami. And Dex is intrigued and actually even delighted by the fact that this killer seems to have a style reminiscent of his own. But he's wondering if this mysterious new arrival is not only invading his turf, but maybe reaching out to him. The new killer seems to be more than copying Dexter. He seems to be saying, come out and play. Dexter's secret life makes for a very lonely existence for him. So the question is, can even a lovable monster find a friend, I guess? In the end of the book, you wonder, will Dexter help his sister catch the killer and earn a promotion, or does he just want to find him himself and talk shop? It's a tough call for Dex. Let me read just a little, little something. While the coffee brewed, I checked for the newspaper, more out of hope than expectation. It was rare for the paper to arrive before 6:30, and on Sundays it often came after 8. It was another clear example of the disintegration of society that had so worried Dad. Really now, if you can't get me my newspaper on time, how can you expect me to refrain from killing people? No paper, no matter. Press coverage of my adventures had never been terribly interesting to me, and Dad had warned me about the idiocy of keeping any kind of scrapbook. He didn't need to. I rarely even glanced at the reviews of my performances. Yeah. Getting inside of a head like that is kind of creepy, but it was also very interesting, and it does help that it's a funny book. But it's very interesting to see how this kind of a mind would operate. If you're familiar at all with The Talented Mr. Ripley, it was a movie that came out recently starring Matt Damon. That's actually the first of a series of books by Patricia Highsmith starring Tom Ripley, who's another total sociopath. Another series that this reminded me of that I particularly like is one by Carol O'Connell. And this one is about another police woman sociopath named Mallory. She's brilliant, she's beautiful, and she takes no hostages. So it's just interesting to get inside the minds of these people. And it was a fun book, I'm sorry to say.
I don't think you have to be sorry to say. But it's funny because over the years, you know, again and again, sort of this question comes up. We talk about certain kinds of books and dealing with certain kinds of characters, and people say, "Wow, ooh, that's awful. It's creepy. Why do you want to read that?" And it's just sort of for the reason that Chris says, because it's, you know, that's why we read. to get to look at the world through the eyes of somebody who is really different than we are. Yeah. That's sort of the point.
To see the world through different lenses.
Yeah. You know? So this book, again, it's called A Darkly Dreaming Dexter, and Jeff Lindsay is the author. And again, if you have internet access, all of the titles, authors that the guest will recommend this morning, they'll be on our website.
Yeah.
So you can go there and get them. Well, Philip, you want to go?
Okay. Ahead? Yeah. I'd like to read from a book with a title I absolutely love. It's called The Museum of Useless Efforts. And it's a short story collection by a writer named Christina Perry Rossi, P-E-R-I, and then capital R-O-S-S-I, Christina Perry Rossi. And I found this book because I'm also the fiction editor for the literary arts magazine through the University of Illinois called Ninth Letter. And I'm always looking for new writers, things, people who we can perhaps, you know, invite to submit work to the magazine. And I'm particularly interested in trying to get to the magazine people who do not write in English and that we could get to them through translations. Mm-hmm. So I was looking at a website called Words Without Borders, which I could recommend to just about anybody. It's a wonderful website that features selections from the work of writers from literally all around the world. And I found a piece by Christina Perry Rossi, and I looked and saw that she had a book that was published in English called The Museum of Useless Efforts. And I must also say that when I got the book, I saw at the back of the book, this is a book that's published by University of Nebraska Press, and in the back of the book I realized that Perry Rossi's book is part of a series called the European Women Writers Series, and that there are 44 other books in the series. And I was like, oh, I'm in a candy store, you know, because I am the target audience for this kind of thing. And I thought, 44 European writers and women writers, you know, it's almost impossible to find the work of women writers in translation in America. The major presses mm-hmm. don't do it anymore. And in fact, it turns out that Nebraska Press, who'd have thunk it, Nebraska Press is one of the most dedicated presses in the nation for bringing very famous writers who we don't know about into English. And in fact, Christina Perry Rossi, who I doubt anybody who's listening has ever heard of, has wonderful blurbs from the South African Nobel Prize winner J.M. Coetzee and the great Argentinian writer Julio Cortázar. So we're talking about serious people, or people who are famous in their home countries who we've never heard of. And so this is a wonderful book. The title piece is wonderful because it is literally about a museum that catalogs useless efforts. And so you can go there and you would find out about various places, like various things, like a man who tried to fly seven times, or some prostitutes who attempted to find another job, a woman who wanted to paint a picture, someone who sought to overcome fear, and nearly everybody who tried to be immortal, who lived or lived as if they were. Also, there are men who have taken long journeys in pursuits of inexistent places, unrecoverable memories, deceased women, disappeared friends. There are children who undertook impossible tasks with great resolve, like the ones who would dig a hole periodically, washed over by the waves. And you really don't need to stop there, because there are other marvelous stories in here. They're all very, very good, and they're all slightly realistic. There are ways in which there's something slightly turns or twists. This one, actually, I'd like to read. It's called Flags, because though it's set in no time or place, and I'm going to read two paragraphs from this short story. No, this is set in no time or place. I think people will understand while I'm reading it. One flag is issued for each dead man. The simple ceremony is always performed in the same way and in the privacy of the home without nosy onlookers. First, two officials arrive to convey the sad news to the relatives. Preparations for the delivery of the flag then begin. It should be pointed out that the presence of the officials has a moderating effect on the pain displayed by the families, who, out of a sense of decorum, restrain their expressions of grief. It's something about the uniforms and the measured expressions established by protocol that puts a limit on feelings of despair and that makes people cry in a more restrained manner. And then, jumping ahead, the use of flags is increasing and is made for a burgeoning industry. A lot of previously unemployed women now work zealously at making these national pennons to meet the needs of the Army, the Air Force, the Navy, the infantry divisions, the airborne divisions, the special brigades, the flamethrowers, the expeditionary forces, and the highly selective combat aircraft crews. The country's population can be divided into two general categories, those who make flags and those who will receive flags. But these aren't entirely discrete categories. Often, one woman will be at her machine assembling the three different colored strips of fabric that make up our flag when she is interrupted by two officials carrying out the painful duty of issuing her a flag she didn't sew. Hmm. She also writes about dreams very well. Two of them that I really love. One of them is about a man who's always saving people in his dreams. So he wakes up exhausted every morning. And this is one about a man who dreams about a city that he can't quite place. The dream came back to him time and again. In it there was an unidentifiable presence, someone of indeterminate sex, whose face he couldn't see but who was clearly there. The dream wasn't quite the same every time. Certain physical aspects changed. Sometimes it was day, sometimes night. There was a house, but not always the same house, or there was no house at all. And the surface of the dream was as desolate as a pampa. And upon awakening, he was certain that those discrepancies were immaterial. The atmosphere of the dream, its climate, was the same. And always the memory, or rather the foreboding, that there was someone in the dream whose face he couldn't see, a mysterious presence that almost certainly held the key to the dream's meaning, without which he was left full of doubt, defenseless. Because not knowing the nature of our dreams is a sort of self-betrayal, a perilous trap set by the forces within.
Again, who's the...
The Christina Perry Rossi. That's her collection, The Museum of Useless Efforts, and it's part of a wonderful series. I've since bought a number of books that are waiting for me to read them. A part of a series called the European Women Writers Series, up to nearly 50 books by women writers from Europe that you've never heard of.
All right.
That's lovely.
We're coming down to the point here where we're fairly soon going to be the end of the hour. And since Chris is only going to be here for this hour, and we're going to have someone from Champagne in the next hour.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yes,
oh,
that's
my God. It's like team tag.
Exactly.
My goodness. Yeah. Wow. I would have given you much more.
I would have made sure that we give you one.
Shut up. I'm sorry.
Because Mr. Blabbermouth over here will be with us for the next hour. I wanted to give you a chance to do one more.
Well, let me see. I guess I'll talk about this one. It's nonfiction, and it just came out quite recently. It's fascinating, true crime. We do a lot of true crime business at the library. It's a big section. People like it. This one is called American Taboo, A Murder in the Peace Corps by Philip Weiss. It's 1975, and 33 Peace Corps volunteers land on the island of Tonga. It's exotic. There are pigs wandering the street. People live in coconut-thatched houses, huts, I should say. Men wear grass skirts. But it is, in fact, all governed by a very exacting rule of conduct. They have their own standards there. But to these young Americans, all these idealistic Peace Corps workers, they call it Never Never Land. It's like a place they've never been to before. Among them is a beautiful 23-year-old named Deb Gardner, and she's in search of adventure like everybody else. She's sensuous and free-spirited, and before long she becomes an object of desire and even obsession in this expat community. Mm. On the night of October 14th, 1976, she's found dying inside her hut, stabbed 22 times. Hours later, this is such an interesting story to me. Hours later, another volunteer turns himself into the Tongan police. But despite the mounds of evidence against him, Dennis Previn was never convicted of any crime. With the aid of the State Department, he returned to New York without being charged, flown home at the Peace Corps' expense. Peace Corps officials did everything in their power to hush up this murder, then funded the aggressive defense that helped Previn go free. Deb Gardner's death and the aftermath took on legendary proportions in Tonga, where justice must be served. As a matter of fact, they had to actually lie to the police commissioner and tell him that Priven was shot by outraged relatives as he got off the airplane in order to make this guy let go of the case. But in fact, Priven, who is a former U of I student, and there's a picture of him in there, and it was so amazing just to see these pictures of people in the 70s, and he's wearing his same old U of I T-shirt. It was anyway, he walked out a free man, and government officials at the time made sure that the story was completely suppressed. It's just now coming out, and it's fascinating to me how it's – so it's got a little bit of conspiracy, a little bit of, again with the crazy killers. But it's kind of – this one's chilling, really, because it's real. And the author keeps trying to get the killer, Priven, to admit it. To he kind of works on his ego and says things to, you know, like, well, aren't you, don't you feel pretty good about yourself now that you've gotten away with it all these years? And the guy is just too clever. He just will not commit. It's really an interesting book. This is good true crime writing. If that's the kind of thing you enjoy, that would be a good one.
All right. Well, you see, when it happens when we have people on the show and they talk about books, we see their true selves emerge. And I'm never going in a dark alley with this woman.
She seems very nice.
I am sorry. I am sure that she is. I'm sure that she is very nice.
Oh, I warned you.
Well, and I'm sure that this, for people who read in different fictional genres, I'm sure that crime writing, either fictional crime, mystery stories, or true crime, certain people just get obsessed with it. And I'm sure that they would just read everything they possibly could.
It's amazing. You'd be surprised and maybe a little upset at how popular that true crime collection is.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're about the point where we're going to have to close out this hour. And I want to say to Chris Williams from the Urbana Free Library, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
We appreciate it. In the next hour, we will have here in that same chair Kelly Strom, who is a collection manager over at Champaign Public Library. We thought, again, because Tanya, who's done this show with us a lot, couldn't be here. We said, well, okay, where do we go to find people who like books? And immediately we thought, well, the library might be a good place. So we asked folks at both libraries.
Great choice.
And were good enough to come over and be with us. So I thank you very much.
Thank you. It was fun.
And Philip, we'll be hanging around the next hour, too. And as I said a couple of times here during the program, that the books we have recommended, they'll be on our website. So you can get at them that way if you have internet access. Otherwise, if you didn't quite catch it, you can give us a call and we'll make sure. We want to make sure that people get the information if they want to read the books. And of course, if you have any kind of book questions, ladies and gentlemen, folks, go to the library. You can ask the folks there. They know what they got.
I do know more than murder and mayhem.
And
I
she
really
knows
do.
Murder and mayhem. So if you're interested in the kind of suggestions that we do on this program, you can go and you can talk with the folks at the library, because they know their collections and they know what moves and what people like, and that's a great place to go. And
we
you
like
won't be bothering them. You will
that's
not be
right.
bothering.
It's my job.
All right. Very good. Well, here we're also going to take a moment here before we close out the hour and go to the market update to try to encourage again people to make a pledge of financial support. Send some money to this radio station. If you like Focus and the other shows we have, they need your support. And as a way of trying to get people to do that, we're giving away books. Jack Brighton.
That's right. It's our job to give away books right now. Get you to call the pledge line, 217-244-9455. The lines are all open right now. There will be no waiting, no lines. All you have to do is call with a pledge of $40 or more, and we will send you either a fiction or a nonfiction book. The phone volunteer will ask you, are you calling for a free book? And you will say yes, and they will ask, which would you like, fiction or nonfiction? And then you can just tell them. And they are from the Focus 580 book collection. A lot of publishers send us a lot of books. I'd say probably a dozen a day. Is that exaggerating?
No, probably not. I'd say I'm sure on average six, seven, eight.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we do a lot of interviews with authors of these books, but there are so many others that we just can't get to. And there are a lot of them just excellent books. We will send you the cream of the crop that we don't have room for in our shelves. 217-244-9455. Let's check in with David Thiel, who is with the phone volunteers. We got a couple lines going and others open.
Yeah, now I know you sometimes give out books to the staff here. So are you telling me that those aren't the cream of the crop?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, we save the best stuff, definitely, for
the listeners.
For the
absolutely, listeners. The people right, who pledge, right. Yes.
Okay.
If you'd like to make a pledge, though, we'll happily add you to the list.
Well, we have heard from five folks so far, and actually, when you actually start talking about the phone number and the books, people actually call. And so we've got a couple of people on the line right now taking advantage of the book offer. We've got we've also heard from Elizabeth and Philip Meadows of Urbana, Brian and Jane Peterson of Monticello, and Lydia Miramontes of Charleston, who have all taken advantage of the book offer this morning by calling 244-9455, choosing fiction or nonfiction, and supporting the station.
And one thing I added before, I want to mention again, if you were planning to give $120, which is just $10 a month, to the station, you can get three books, you know? If you want a fiction and two nonfiction or whatever combination you'd like, we'll serve them up. So make that pledge call, 217-244-9455. $40 pledge gets you a book. If you pledge beyond that, you can get more.
All right. Well, I tell you what, we got to move on here. We'll have some more book talk in the next part of the show, and we hope to give away more books, and we also hope to hear from people making pledges. Again, that 244-9455 is the number to call. Today's broadcast, by the way, is made possible in part by a grant from RE/MAX Realty Associates, currently handling over 30% of the real estate sales transactions in Champaign County. That's 352-5700. Nobody sells more real estate than RE/MAX, and they encourage you to join them in supporting public broadcasting. The show here, the Focus 580, also made possible in part with support from the Art Mart in Lincoln Square Mall, Urbana. The Art Mart is pleased to support public radio in East Central Illinois. We count them among our supporters, but we also hope that we can count you. Over the years, we have had people who have supported us very, very loyally, and we want to say thank you. Very big thank you to those people. If, by the way, it's time to renew your contribution, this would be a great time to do it. But we just can't rely on the same number of people to keep doing it. Over the years, we have less federal money, we have less state money, and now almost half of the funds that it takes to operate the station come from people who listen. So if you value the show, if you value the programs you hear on the station, 244-9455, the number to call, please do that, and we'll be happy to send you a book, as many as we possibly can. By the way, we're going to have a writer on the Afternoon Magazine today I do want to mention. Robert Olin Butler will be on the show today talking about his latest book. It's a collection of short stories inspired by the picture postcard. The title is Had a Good Time, Stories from American Postcards. He'll be visiting and with Celeste Quinn following the 1 o'clock news this afternoon. That's the Afternoon Magazine. Gets underway at noon. We'll have news for you at 1 minute past the hour, so we hope that you'll stick around right now. Though we have an update on the commodity market, so please stay tuned.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety is proud to underwrite agricultural programming on WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
And with this update on the markets, I'm Jay Pierce. Coming up on 10:59, a good time for you to call 217-244-9455 and support the agricultural service that you listen to us for. December wheat on the Chicago Board of Trade down 4.5 now at 314.75. March at 326 is down 3.75. December corn 206.5 down 0.5. March corn 216.75 down 0.25. May 223.75 down 0.25. And July